Welcome to Transforming NATO, a podcast exploring how NATO is refining its edge in a rapidly changing world. This series is brought to you by ACT, NATO's Allied Command Transformation. ACT is transforming NATO to ensure that the world's most successful alliance stays ready to meet the security challenges of today and tomorrow. I'm Kathy Lewis. Digital transformation, it's a game changer all over the world. Just as the Industrial Revolution changed the way we lived and worked in the 18th and 19th centuries, so digital transformation is reshaping life in the 21st century. New technologies are once again changing the way we live and work and leading to a boom in information-based industries and information-based threats. Throughout this podcast series, we've been taking stock of what the world looks like today compared to what it looked like when NATO was formed in 1949. Back then, the organizing principle was collective defense and deterring Soviet expansion. Today, it's still about collective defense, but in a world powerfully shaped by digital technologies that have advanced faster than any other development in our history. Put simply, digital technology is at the heart of nearly everything we do, and its development has shattered some industries and propelled others. So what does all this digital development mean for NATO? Today, we're thinking that through, how NATO is adapting to digital transformation, a development that's touched so many parts of our lives and our work. Joining us today is Jean-René Couture, who's NATO Allied Command Transformation's Deputy Digital Transformation Champion and Federated Interoperability Branch Head. JR, good to have you with us today.
Thank you very much.
That's an amazing title.
Yeah, it's probably too long, but it's basically dealing with a lot of digital things, essentially.
Yeah. And I wonder if we could put this in some perspective. We talked a moment ago about the idea that the 18th and 19th century, we have this industrial revolution, which really changes the way we make things and changes certain other aspects of our daily life. But boy, when you think about digital transformation against that backdrop, you pretty quickly conclude that it seems perhaps to be much more challenging because it's affecting every part of our regular lives and then every part of our defense lives as well.
Exactly. In many ways, it's closer to us because it deals about information, about intelligence, about data, so something we can rely to very deeply. And it affects essentially everything we do because there is a information dimensions being for making cars, for delivering books, or for making war, right? There's an information element in this. There's a planning element. There's an execution element, which is all rely on information and knowledge. And all of those things are being transformed, revolutionized in front of our eyes.
You say it is really important for us to act more quickly. You say the urgency of digital transformation for NATO's military forces cannot be overstated. You were very clear about this idea that there is work to do and we have to pick up the pace.
I think lots of things have changed. So it's difficult to put a start at the digital revolution, but take 20, 30 years ago, and we've noticed the change during that time. I think with artificial intelligence, with cloud computing, the acceleration will increase. So if we sit down again in 30 years from now, we will have witnessed a lot more changes in those last 30 years than the previous 30 years starting from today. So not only do we need to change, we need to learn to change more rapidly. We know what to do for the next 3, 4, 5 years. We're going to have to do more probably for the 10, 15 years, for example. I cannot tell you what those things are now, which is why it's important to learn how to change and be agile, because we know we're going to have to change. We just don't know precisely for that long term what those changes will look like.
Can you think of any other time in the history of NATO where the alliance has been faced with a change that affects its military operations to the degree that this one does?
The end of the Cold War was another example. It was a completely different aspect. It was political. For the first 40, 50 years of its life, NATO had a clear mission defending Western Europe, I mean, you had Linus Serve in Europe during that time. So this was, in hindsight, life was simple back then. And then suddenly the whole world changed in the 90s. So it was very challenging for NATO from a political point of view. Today, the changes is not only affecting NATO per se, but affecting everyone, all countries, all markets, so to speak. And it's changing the nature of warfare, probably to the correspondence of what we've noticed for during World War One, where machine guns, automation, airplanes were basically put in real use for the first time. So now, I mean, we're kind of having a bit of a preview of this, what's going on in Ukraine with drone and command and control and the use of different sources of information. So similar, I think, really changing moment for military business.
You know, it's interesting when we think about security, certainly when we think about NATO and its mission for joint defense, we used to speak a lot about, and I think obviously still do, about interoperability, about, you know, language barriers. There's a lot to deal with when you're talking about all of these nations and different military branches. And so when you throw this digital transformation in on top of it, what are some of the challenges that you face when we think about the fact that our security, we have always guarded very carefully. We guard it carefully in our native countries. We guard it carefully within the alliance. Yep. Now it seems like we're going to have to start in a cultural sort of way, thinking differently about all of this.
Yeah, in many ways. Two things. Digital transformation, I think, has to be done on top of basically what we were already doing. So you mentioned interoperability. So this is even more important now because a lot of our interoperability is about moving information around, and that's critical for digital transformation. So it's something on top of what it is we're doing. And second thing is the digital revolution is erasing our classical model of the world. Right? So where is my personal life starting and ending? What is my work life starting and ending? Do I care about the opening hour of my banks if I can bank 24/7? So the same thing is happening in the military. And by tradition, the military is very structured, functions, commands, levels, strategic, operational. So and I think all of those things are being challenged by the digital revolution, because all of those organization of functions and level of commands were basically modeled to deal with complexity. There's always, go back to Napoleon time or whatever, I mean, managing an army of 100,000 people with the logistics and all of this, complicated, lots of information to deal with, lots of decision to make, you needed organization to do this. We still carry on with those organizations today, but the digital revolution is sort of going through this like a hot knife through butter and is saying, oh, we don't have to do this like this anymore. That's why, I mean, think of Uber as the largest sort of taxi company of the world, which doesn't own any single taxi. So all of those sort of paradigm, so somebody would have been out of the planet for the last 25 years with a good understanding of how the world worked in the 1990s, for example, would come back today and would see all of those things and would wonder what happened during those 25, 30 years. Because all of those model, ways of working, ways of shopping, ways of consuming entertainment, all of this is being challenged as we speak.
Yeah. I'm thinking militarily, we think in terms of branches of the military. I think you're in the Canadian Army.
I was in the Canadian Army for 20 plus years.
Okay.
Not anymore, but...
Right. But I'm guessing that was, like it is in many countries, a vertical structure. You're in the Army and that's what you are. And To what extent do you think this digital transformation affects or has an impact on that kind of structure, you know, where you have... You are in the Army. Do you have anything to do with the Navy? Do you, if you are in, the Canadian Army, do you have interaction with the U.S. Navy, for example? I wonder how all of that plays out.
All of those will be challenged. If you look at the Army, for example, and all the structures from a platoon to a corps, an army, again, those were put in place to deal with complexity of information. So the information were flowing, enemy were reporting from the platoon up to the core, and then the information was assembled, somebody was taking a decision, orders were coming down, so on and so forth, at a speed of hours and days. All of this can be done in seconds today. So that will, and what we see in the world, that tends to make organization flatter, right? Because a lot of industries have also multiple layers of hierarchies, which have been flattened. So I think we're due to some flattening also in the military. And again, the information crosses domains, we call them. So the Navy, the Air Force, the Army, etc. So we're going to have to work together much more closely than ever before. I mean, we're still going to have platforms, ships and airplanes and tanks. I mean, those will not disappear. But how we organize them together, I think, could potentially be quite different. And it's going to be about generating some form of effect. And whoever is best positioned based on the information we have and decision made would be called to act on achieving this effect.
You know, it's interesting because...
It's like Uber in many ways.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
When I call for a taxi, I don't need to know if I'm a foreign city. I don't need to know the phone numbers or what are the companies serving taxi in this particular city. I have one app to go to that works all over the world, and they give me. So it's a bit similar. If I want an effect to happen in a certain place, I don't need to know, is it going to be the Navy? Is it going to be the Army? I don't need to know the intricate business model of any one of those services. I just want the service to take place, essentially, or the effect to happen.
And so, you could be far away for that to happen.
Yes, very much.
I was thinking about that from the perspective of battlefield conditions, healthcare, surgery, the kinds of things that happen in emergency medicine. Is this, do you think, digital transformation going to extend to the place where you may be on a battlefield, but you can do a remote surgical procedure or something like that, do you think?
I think so. I think it will also help us in the planning, because you can have predictive models. So as you put this into a computer, it will give you what are the potential outcomes of this, including casualties. And so you should be informed of what are the locations where you're going to have the highest level of casualties, and you might be able to pre-position equipment to do this. And on top of this, you will have, I mean, if you don't have the surgeon on location, if the surgeon is back home 3,000 kilometers away, through digital technologies, that person could potentially perform the surgery.
That's amazing.
So digital transformation is, as I said, time and space is changing. Same way as wherever in the world I can do my Canadian banking, regardless of the time of the day or the distance from my branch in Ottawa, right?
Yeah.
So that sort of change, which we've experienced with banking for many years, will happen somehow in a lot of other domains.
That's fascinating. You say really that NATO has to be, I shouldn't say you say personally, NATO says, collectively, there are three real key areas of focus when it comes to digital transformation. And the first one is people, that we really need to have a digital-ready workforce. This was very striking to me, because this doesn't have to do with ships or planes or, you know, anything like that. It has to do with knowledge, and it has to do with really understanding how experiences that you will have in the theater and in your personal life are really changing.
Yeah, we need to be able, I even read an article where the author was proposing that U.S. military should establish a digital core like the medical corps, because everyone needs to have some form of level of digital literacy. Not everyone will have to develop a complex AI model, but if you're the decision maker being advised by a particular model, you need to have some form of understanding how did this model came up with that particular recommendation. Because if it's completely foreign to you, then that's not going to work. So there is a real digital literacy program we need to embark on, I think. And again, I think with the newer generation, it's probably going to be easier. I was saying to someone, we'll probably have already some general admirals that are digital native in the early 40s or about. So that's going to, I mean, as I think as the newer generation comes in, that's going to help. But above and beyond this, we need to insert a lot of digital literacy like being able to read and write, essentially. We need to have the same form of ability. We don't want everyone to become a novel writer, but you need to be able to write. So similarly, we need to become literate with all of that data that we have to work with.
And to that end, expanding on that just a moment, I believe that you have said that to some extent, we're all going to have some knowledge of digital analytics, which feels right now like something they do over in that department or in that company. You know, it just doesn't feel like something that as an individual one might feel like one had to have. But you say we really are kind of approaching that moment.
Yeah, we are. And one of the challenging moments is if you've made your decision based on your experience and your gut feeling, which is fine. Now you're going to insert some advice from AI, and you're going to get some analytics in front of you that potentially tells you to go in a different direction. If you are not literate with this, then you would probably reject this immediately. But I'm not saying that you need to accept this all the time and always ignore your gut feeling. I mean, that would be as crazy. But you're going to have to incorporate this new decision advice in what you've already been doing. That's going to be part of the challenge. I think it's a bit like a relationship. I don't know, if you would develop with your car GPS. I mean,
you're not going to drive into the lake because the GPS tells you to do that, right? Because they can be wrong.
The first time your GPS proposes you a itinerary, which you think is crazy, you're not too sure. But then if that proves to work well, then obviously next time you will be more inclined to follow the advice. So that sort of relationship will also need. But for that, you need to understand a little bit how these things work, hence the digital literacy and where the data is coming from and who has seen that data. So there's a bit of work to do. And again, some intelligence community, for example, I think is relatively advanced because they've been doing this. But that sort of ability will also need to be adopted by basically everyone.
So you say people are an important piece of this. Processes as well are an important element here, ensuring that NATO addresses these future challenges across all the domains and the environments that we've been discussing. But you've also said that NATO has to adapt its command structure for a new environment. That seems to be another one of those cultural Correct. Changes or adjustments that you can really see why that would be necessary.
Yeah, I think by and large, the way we organize our forces today is based on the Cold War and the experience from even the Second World War or even before that. Those things have evolved, but I think they need to evolve in a sort of a huge step to really take into consideration digital transformation. Just for example, given the amount of data coming at us and the decision that comes with this, we're going to have to delegate probably more decision at the lower level than used to be, because the lower level will be as well informed now as the higher level, right? So back to World War One, one platoon commander out of 100 only could see what was in front of him. His commander, three echelons back, had a much broader view. But today, everyone can have that broader view. So where do you put the decision making to optimize and stay ahead of your adversary is a question to ask.
That is really interesting when you put all of that information into so many more people's hands and what that means in terms of the structures that we've developed over time, some of which may not work in this new world.
Yeah. And again, we have to, as we go to this, we have to be careful that we don't throw the baby with the bathwater. Yes. So that's going to be an evolution. And like any evolution, we're going to have old ways of working and new ways of working that will need to work together for a while, like you've seen in any revolution, right? I mean, 100 years ago, if you were to walk in the street of the city, you would see a lot of horses and cars sharing the road. So we're going to be, that's going to be quicker, though, because, I mean, the digital revolution is moving much, much faster than any precedent revolutions. But it will be a transition of the something similar.
And so the final of the big three areas that NATO believes that it has to really manage here and lead in has to do with technology. And, you know, that's something that, again, we look to the private sector. They're struggling with technology, figuring out what the right thing to invest in is, because that's a very expensive potential mistake. So how in NATO are you making those decisions about what technology to invest in?
Two things with technology, notwithstanding the challenges it presents, I think it's probably the easier of the three dimensions. And secondly, you need to make your technology choices as you evolve your people and your process. Because if you insist of investing in technology to automate your 1970s ways of working, they will sell it to you, but I don't think it's the best way to spend your money. So one of the good things is we don't have to invent new technology. So the military invented radios, invented airplanes. So a lot of technology came through the military over the last 100 years or more. For information technology, digital technology, I think it's all there. Needs to be adapted to the military use cases and needs to be used smartly. One of the first thing we need to do is, like any building, we need to start with a basement. And so this is the infrastructure. We probably have to move to cloud infrastructure more rapidly than people may have thought. One of the reasons is that if we want to leverage artificial intelligence, those things needs huge computing power. And most infrastructure we have on-premise today, they just don't have that power. So those large language model like ChatGPT, if you try to develop something similar for the NATO use case, it's going to take years to make work on our current legacy infrastructure. So we need the new basement. And by and large, we're going to have to look at industry and public cloud infrastructure to get us there. But we have a lot of challenges from data ownership, data sovereignty, security. All of those rules were designed for different paradigm. So we need to change those things very, very rapidly. Getting the technology per se, getting a contract with Amazon or Microsoft is not super difficult. Getting the right one a bit more complicated and making sure that our process and people, everything has been aligned to maximize this. That's the real...
It's an adoption issue.
Correct.
Yeah. Really interesting. We're talking with J.R. Couture, who's NATO Allied Command Transformation's Deputy Digital Transformation Champion and Federated Interoperability Branch Head. Speaking of interoperability, reminds me that from a technology perspective, you have a number of nations here that have varying degrees of technological capability. And does that mean that that situation is somehow alleviated if we're talking more about adoption of technology?
Yes, I would say so. Ukraine is a good example. In many ways, a few years ago, they didn't have the sort of sophisticated command and control system that the United States, France, Germany, many NATO allies have. Looking at how NATO was using standardizations and interoperability and looking at the offering from industry, they managed to build very rapidly some very effective command control system, which have made a difference in their struggle against Russia. One of the challenges for bigger nations that have a huge legacy systems is, they realize they've put millions, billions in those systems, and they don't want to throw those away immediately, and they cannot afford to re-equip their ships and airplanes. So that's part of the challenge also to transition all of the legacy to the new ways of working. I mean, again, there's ways and means to do this. You don't need to completely do that overnight, but that's clearly part of the challenge. And also, as I said, the data sovereignties, the security, all of those were assuming a computing paradigm, which is changing.
Yeah, you know, it strikes me that when we're talking about something as complex as digital transformation and something that's changing as rapidly as it is, that process of transformation is won by challenging the status quo and experimenting and getting comfortable to some degree with failure. You're going to try something, it's not going to work, then come try another thing, and maybe that works, and maybe it doesn't. When I think about that in a defense context, it occurs to me that people don't get promoted for making mistakes, you know? And yet this seems to demand a comfort with at least temporary failure, that everything is not going to work 100% of the time the first time you try it. And so I wonder, that's what seems to me to be a real that's a cultural challenge.
Exactly.
To shift your thinking on that.
I mean, if you look at how nations are developing and procuring complex weapon system, being a fighter aircraft, a aircraft carriers, or a tank, those are military unique platform. We need to define very, very precisely the requirements for every function these things will perform. Mistakes are super expensive. People doing this are risk averse, rightly so. And the result is basically a bespoke, tailor-made capacity, tank, platform, what have you, that you wanted. And it takes multiple years. What we have to procure now is completely different. Many of the basic platform that we're looking at, it's more akin to commodity than a unique capability. On that commodity, we're going to add our own model, AI model and software bespoke to us. The sort of the grid on which these things will work needs to be treated as a commodity, like electricity in many ways. If you look at history 100 years ago, a lot of big companies and organizations were fretting about letting go their own on-premise power generation engines to go to the grid because, oh, I don't control this, and is it going to be there when I need it? So I think we're at the same moment with digital technologies, where instead of doing everything on-premise ourselves, the bottom part of the stack, the foundation, the basement I just mentioned, that I think we need to consume this as a service. And on that service, we're going to have our own appliances, to use the electricity analogy. The other reality is we in NATO and many nations, I think we still have too many people, IT people, consumed by trying to figure out the communication aspects to maintain those on-premise systems instead of simply taking it from providers that exist nowadays. And then it could be free up to be used at the data layer, at the AI layer, to become data scientists, for example. We need to transform a lot of our network engineers in data scientists in many ways, because the networking will come to us as a service, like electricity. I mean, we don't employ so many electricians in our company anymore, right? I mean, we get the electricity as a service so that we can free up those people to give us the more value-added data exploitation, data insight that is important for us.
You know, it strikes me that this is a word that we use a lot, innovation.
Yep.
But it really is a cultural mindset, and it probably requires some different, just a different cultural reality. And I wonder, how do you go about inspiring innovation and incentivizing for innovation in a system that may not have always been incentivized that way?
Actually, I read an article about targeting mainly the U.S. government. About procurement officers. Typically, the procurement officers we have in military organization are the ones that are risk averse for all the reasons I mentioned, specific requirements, etc. The other was saying, well, we need procurement officers which would have bonuses based on the result of the model, AI model that would come about, right? So we really need to turn this completely around to encourage risk and agility, because I said, and the risk are not, obviously, the risk on an aircraft carrier is billions of dollars. A risk on a AI model is much less, and the decision can be changed probably much more rapidly than if your aircraft carrier is three quarters completed. So we really need to change our mindset towards these things.
I hope we'll get to talk again in 2030 when all of this looks much clearer, perhaps, than it does today.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure if it's going to... I think we're going to see that we've progressed when we look back. It's not by looking at today, for example, that we realize, that we are in a digital world per se. But if we compare how we do things today in our personal life to how we're doing these things 20 or 30 years ago, this is where we realize a change. So we got, but hopefully, yes, when we look back to 2020, 2030, 2023, in 2030, that we've made progress towards a more digital environment.
J.R. Couture, it's been a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much for helping us understand what digital transformation means for NATO. Really nice talking with you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. J.R. Couture is NATO Allied Command Transformation's Deputy Digital Transformation Champion and Federated Interoperability Branch Head. That's it for this edition of Transforming NATO, a podcast exploring how NATO is refining its edge in a rapidly changing world. This series is brought to you by ACT, NATO's Allied Command Transformation. You can learn more about ACT at act.nato.int. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.